Blog Talk Radio.
This podcast is brought to you by PEMCO Capital Management. PEMCO Capital Management provides an institutional platform for accredited investors to gain exposure in niche sectors within the distressed residential mortgage and real estate markets. Visit PEMCO Capital Management on the web at www.pemco-capital.com. Now your host of Capital Markets Today, Louis Amaya.
Welcome to Capital Markets Today. This is Louis Amaya. The housing slump is the economy's biggest casualty so far from a series of Federal Reserve rate hikes designed to tame inflation. Lobbyists are scrambling to get help from Washington as the housing market demand tanks in response to rising interest rates and falling home prices. What do investors think? Futures contracts on the Case-Shiller Home Price 20-City Index, which trades on Chicago Mercantile Exchange, are trading almost 20 points down from the peak of 327 a couple of months ago to 268 for January 2024 contracts. This is slightly lower than what the index was was pre-COVID. Joining the podcast to discuss home values is Darren Bloomquist, Vice President of Market Economics at Auction.com. Darren, welcome to the podcast.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me, Louis.
Before we get started, just wanted to get a general, from your perspective, a general overview of the last couple of years and the housing peak and now the turn.
Yes, absolutely. I think I will back up to 2019, and the housing market was really cruising in for what I would call potentially a soft landing. At that point, interest rates actually had started to come up a little bit into the fours, which was high for the time. And the housing market was cooling off. We saw home price appreciation going down to the low single digits. And I think we started to see evidence of even slight price corrections in some markets. So that's where we were. And it was almost, I would say, a little bit more naturally occurring market cycle that we were in. We had, you know, been in this housing boom for, at that point, 7 to 8 years, if you consider the bottom 2012 in terms of home prices. And then we had the pandemic, which the initial thought was that's going to tank the housing market even further, but actually it had the opposite effect after kind of a short shock to the system, where we saw home sales and prices drop, but it was a very quick V-shaped recovery. And so I consider really what we've seen over the last, I guess, 2 years since the since 2020 is an interruption of the naturally occurring market cycle that was taking place. And unfortunately, the consequence, you know, it was more of the reaction to that shock than the shock itself that's going to have the long-term consequences on the housing market, if that makes sense. So we would have been, the market was kind of due for a slowdown, and then it was because of the reaction to the pandemic and the stimulus and the lower interest rates and all that, the housing market was stimulated even further, and we saw this housing frenzy, this housing boom that occurred that I think inflated the already somewhat inflated housing market as of 2019. And so now we have to deal with the consequences of that. And I think, I mean, there are good reasons. I think looking back, we might say no regrets, I don't know, that there was all this stimulus during the pandemic, because it did avoid what could have been probably a more disastrous slowdown or crash in the housing market. But now we have to deal with it, really the consequences of that and the fact that we were already basically due for a housing slowdown prior to the pandemic.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting you talk about the stimulus. I did another podcast series on the normalization of distressed debt because of the types of stimulus packages the government puts in place every time we have some type of a recession. you put a lot of money in the 2006 crash, right? Low and kept interest rates artificially low for obviously too long a period. But the money that was borrowed and put into the economy from the 2006 crash, that's still there and hasn't been even started to be paid back. And then COVID hit, which we even deployed more capital and stimulus into the economy. So to me, this whole inflation is not necessarily a surprise. I was kind of expecting that because like I said, the interest rates artificially low for 12 years. You know, they should have been slowly increasing in my perspective back in 2013, 2014, slowly starting to increase rates. That's a whole other discussion, but it's fairly interesting.
Well, I would jump in and just say that the Fed back exactly in around 2013 and 2014, they started pulling back, I believe, on quantitative easing, and they did, and they also did start raising the federal funds rate. They made an attempt, but the market, that was the taper tantrum. The market reacted kind of violently. And so I think that scared them a little bit, or you know, I mean, not to project onto them, but, and then again in 2018, they started raising rates again. And that's when the market responded as well as in 2019. And so I think you're right, but they didn't have the stomach to do it and take some of the consequences at that time. They wanted to continue, among other things, to see the housing market do well.
Right.
And so that's, yeah, this is a long-term story. I mean, this is not just about the pandemic. This is about the response to the Great Recession and the long-term response to that was probably, you know, designed to protect from that same sort of thing happening again, repeating that history. But in the process of doing that, especially during the pandemic, you end up repeating history from further back that fewer people remember, right? From from the inflationary days of the 1970s and 80s.
Right. No, I totally agree. Is it, when you're looking at the nation in general, obviously there's certain bubbles and areas of the state that are more susceptible to value decline. Are you seeing any specific areas, cities or states that you see are particularly susceptible to the decline?
To home price decline specifically?
Correct. Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of data out there. We actually have some really cool data. That's auction.com data that, because we have a huge pool of 6.5 million potential buyers out there who are using auction.com. And there's a much smaller number of those that are actually buying, but those buyers are typically local investors. We call them local community developers in the markets where they live. And so they are very in tune typically with their local markets. And they are, when they're buying the distressed properties on auction.com, their primary purpose is to renovate those and then turn those around within the next 3 to 6 months, either as a rental or as a home sale. And so they're constantly forward-looking, short-term forward-looking in the market. And so their behavior on our site is actually a really good barometer for what's coming. And so when we look at that, we do see, number one, that overall that between the first quarter of this year and the third quarter, they started becoming much more conservative in their bidding. And to put numbers on it, they were baking in only an 11% discount on average, buyers on our platform buying foreclosures, only 11% discount below as-is value in the first quarter. That's more than doubled. Now, as of the third quarter, that discount has doubled to 23%, more than doubled. And so that tells me that they are anticipating a market slowdown, and they were anticipating a market slowdown even as early as we really saw that shift in March of this year. and it turns out that, you know, the retail market kind of peaked in May or June, so they were ahead of the curve by 2 or 3 months. Anyway, so that's one thing, is they're anticipating a slowdown. We're continuing to see that trend. But then when you look at those numbers, same numbers by region of the country, that's where it starts to get a little bit more interesting. I would say at the national level, the trend is reverting to the pre-pandemic kind of norm. But then specifically in the western region of the country, that's where we see those discounts that our buyers are baking into their purchases is quite a bit above pre-pandemic norms. And so what that tells me is the West is most susceptible to a price decline, at least according to our buyers who live and invest in those Western markets. So the West is most susceptible. The other regions we looked at are Central, Southeast, and Northeast. All of those, at least at this point, are reverting more to the pre-pandemic normal, which then I would suggest that's probably, at least at this point, would indicate those markets are going to go back to maybe 2 to 5% home price appreciation, kind of that boring level. But the West is where I see most risk. And then if you want, we can talk about it even on we drill down further than the regional level to the market level. If you would like, I can talk about the markets that are most risk based on that, our buyer behavior.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. You know, when we our fund is very heavy real estate related type of assets, and when we started realizing that there was going to potentially be a drop, we looked to hedge our portfolio, and I mentioned the Case-Shiller index in the intro, and when I started looking at the futures contracts for the Case-Shiller in the 20-city index, investors who trade and short the index are bidding 20 points down from the peak. So it was at 327, I think, at the peak, and the January 24 contracts are selling for 268. So to me, that was the first indication of, wow, this is going to be a little bit bigger than I thought. The 268 number is slightly lower than the pre-COVID, where it was pre-COVID. So that was the first indication to me that well, people that don't necessarily own real estate, or at least using the index to hedge, which is what we do, you know, they're expecting a 20-point decline in the 20-city index. So that doesn't include the western state. I mean, it does include the cities in the western states, but not necessarily all of the western, you know, population area. So
that's really interesting. So that would that suggest, could you kind of project off of that whether that would indicate like an actual home price correction, or would that be just returning to lower home price rate of home price appreciation, or is that reading too much into that?
Yeah. So what that's telling me is at least in the 20-city index, that's the most liquid that trades. It's going to get back to slightly pre-COVID home values. So what we do is we put on a hedge, and if it does that, we come out flat, right? So we're, you know, that's fine. We come out flat. But if for some reason it drops further, and then so since we're heavy real estate, if it drops down to 230 or, you know, goes down even further, then we make money on the hedge, but we lose someone on the real estate portfolio. So the bet is it'll get down to pre-COVID. That's what everybody's kind of thinking, 268, 270 on the 20 city index. But the hedge is, you never know what happens if it goes down to 220. I mean, it's such a weird environment these days. We don't really know what's going to happen. I talk to so many different investors, and I hear all the time that, yeah, you know, there's going to be a flattening, there's maybe some stagnation, but there's such a housing shortage. It's not really going to decline like, you know, more than what we expect. And the first thing I think is when I hear that from everybody, that's when I know something different may happen, because it's just kind of like groupthink, right? That's what happened in 2008 crash. It was, you know, I talked to everybody, and everybody's like originating, oh, we're making so much money on the origination side, we can absorb any loss we have on the asset management side. And everybody I talked to thought the same way. And so that's my first indication that, okay, well, just in case, we bought some futures and shorted the index, and we did that with the RPX index back in 2006, and it really helped us out. But that was an interesting indication to answer your question that, well, people who are buying futures or a seller, basically, you know, I'm a seller at 270 in January 2024. So if it drops to 230, I make money. And if it drops to like 280, I lose a little bit, but that's not a whole lot. So it's more of a hedge. But that was my first indication of, wow, this, you know, it could potentially, at least in some areas, drop further, which goes to what you were just discussing. Is there any specific, you know, granular information you can give us on potential cities that may be more susceptible?
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, before I get that, I just wanted to make I thought that was really interesting what you said. Just a couple comments on that is, my initial reaction to what you were saying about everybody saying, well, we're going to see a slowdown, but nothing major. I think what you said is actually good. There's a whole element of that of if everybody's thinking it, then maybe maybe they've bought into a narrative that's just too easy. But the other two pushbacks I would have is I do think that, and I don't, just to put my cards on the table, I'm not one who thinks that we're going to see the type of home price crash that we saw back in 2008 and following, where prices nationwide were down over that period of by about 30%, and in some markets, you know, 50-60%. So that's not what I'm saying here, but what I'm saying is that, number one, on the housing supply argument, which is out there, there's just so much, there's more demand than there is supply. My pushback on that is I do think actually that's not quite as solid of an argument as some people think, because household formation last decade slowed down to the lowest level since the 70s, and it's projected based on, you know, birth rates and immigration. This is all I'm borrowing data from Zelman Housing Research here. So they make a good argument that kind of supply or demand side of things, demographics, is not quite as strong as we think, because the household formation is projected, based on their projections at least, to go even slower over the next decade than it was in the last. And then the other piece of that is that I think a lot of housing demand was pulled forward during the pandemic. Folks who might have bought in 23 or 24 ended up buying in 21 or 22 because of this environment of such favorable interest rates, as well as this environment of work from home. So it pulled forward demand, and there'll be a little bit of a hangover from that. And then the other thing I would say is psychology. Psychology is very important when it comes to home prices, and demand can weaken very quickly based on psychology and what people think is going to happen. So those are a couple of points. But getting to what you asked about the market level data, when we look at our buyer behavior, the market's most at risk based on our buyer behavior, where buyers are saying, basically hedging themselves against a home price correction in these markets by the way they're bidding on our site. Number one is San Francisco. Maybe not a surprise there. That already, at least by some measures, has gone negative in terms of home prices. And then we have Pensacola, Florida, Pueblo, Colorado. That's a smaller market. San Diego. Minneapolis, St. Paul, that's a little bit of a surprise to me. Riverside, California. Lakeland, Florida. Tucson, Arizona. Davenport, Iowa. And Phoenix, Arizona. You do have a mix there, but I would say my takeaway there is there's a lot of concentration in the West, in that high risk, those high risk categories.
I guess that's not too surprising. I live in San Diego, so the price appreciation over the last 2 to 3 years has been insane. Inflation is really cutting into people's buying power along with increased interest rates. So I can definitely see that. I literally went to the grocery store the other day, bought one bag of groceries for $175. And for anybody on a fixed income or, you know, in the services industry, I talk to my wife all the time. I simply don't see how they can survive in Southern California. I mean, it's just impossible. So to me, it's not sustainable what I'm seeing just on the ground, not even looking at, you know, data and other things. So I'm not surprised with that. One of the things I'm trying to get more information about, and maybe you can shed some light on this, is the large single family rental funds. I heard that, you know, some of them are starting to strategically liquidate some of their portfolio. When many years ago when I was GMAC and before the 2006 crash, I was managing assets at GMAC, and when we determined there was going to be a pretty steep correction out, we started selling, right? So the first to the market generally wins. And we started doing strategically. So we got a good 6 to 7 months of selling pools of loans out before everybody realized what was really going on. Is that something that you see in your side, or if you see in general, are any of the housing funds starting to pick certain markets and saying, okay, the game's over on home price appreciation, it's going to be stagnant for a while, and we've done really well. Let's cash out on some of these assets.
Yeah, I haven't seen that in the data. Although to be fair, I haven't really dug into that specific question. Anecdotally, I have heard of some funds that are interested in that. Although at least the perspective I've heard is that they're not. You know, I guess this is what you would describe as a strategic approach. They're certainly not in fire sale mode, but they're interested in liquidating some of the portfolio, but they're not desperate, you know. And so I think at least that's what I've heard. I would be interested to dig into that data. I wouldn't be surprised to see at least some folks doing that. And, you know, that's typically the pattern. As you said, before a downturn, there were forward-looking folks who did that back in 2006, who saw the writing on the wall and liquidated most of their portfolios and then waited around for a year or two and then started buying, you know, some very similar properties at a much discounted price point. So I wouldn't be surprised to see some of that going on, but certainly haven't heard that on a wide scale and haven't seen that in the data yet at this point. And of course, if, you know, the smart ones who are doing it are going to be doing it carefully and not flooding the market with inventory. The investors I talk to on our platform who tend to be smaller scale, not, you know, the big funds that are, but, you know, some of the investors on our platform would be holding, you know, potentially, dozens, if maybe hundreds, of properties in their portfolio, and the ones I've talked to in that camp are staying tight at this point, sticking with that and sticking with it for the long run with their portfolios.
Do you see any indication that rents will decline in proportionate to home values? Or are we going to have a scenario where home values may decline, but rents continue to stay at their current levels?
Yeah, rents are typically less volatile than home prices because they're based on more strongly based on income even than home prices. But the difference here is that rents have been more volatile on the upside during the last few years. And so I do think there is actually more risk now that they would fall as well, along with home prices. Then if you look back to the last, you know, downturn, rents did come down a little bit. There's a little bit of a dip, but they were they were much more stable than home prices, to your point. But I think there's a, just based on the upside this time around, there's a lot more risk for downside. I mean, and home prices coming down, that should put downward pressure on rents as well as a competitor for those folks who are renters to possibly jump into the housing market. And you, at least at this point, you don't have a lot of, one of the dynamics in the last downturn is you did have this huge wave of foreclosures, and you had a lot of people who basically had to be renters because they were, they had lost their home and they couldn't qualify to buy another home. You don't have that dynamic either in this market, which I think should have some impact. So I do think there's some more risk for a bigger drop in rents this time around.
One of the things that really shocked me with COVID was it came out of left field and came really quickly. And no one really even modeled that type of environment or scenario in because no one was thinking about it. In regards to the housing market or, in regards to the housing market, is there anything that you that investors are not considering, or that may come out of left field, and I don't know if you think about that or not, or if you discuss with others, do you see kind of a black swan type of event with housing or the economy that could happen over the next 12 to 18 months?
That's a great question, and it's funny because I was actually back in 2019. I was thinking more along those lines because at that point we, as I said, it was looking more like a soft landing, but then I actually have a slide from a presentation I did back then where I had a bunch of kind of potential shocks. And one of, this was in February, so it wasn't that far before things happened. But, one of them was the coronavirus, if that ballooned into something we didn't expect, but there were a whole other list of things as well that could be potential shocks. I actually am not thinking in that context as much right now because we've experienced the shock, but that doesn't mean another one couldn't come. But I would actually say the black swan event is, at least for the housing market, what I think has proven to be the case is, and maybe I'm wrong on this, but a black swan event is actually less of a threat because the pattern that we've seen, at least when it comes to the housing market, is strong proactive intervention to prevent an immediate crash. And it's almost the approach that was taken, it's the playbook for natural disasters that was taken back in between the last the 2008 recession and now, when there was a couple of years with some pretty intense natural disaster events, and the playbook that the mortgage servicing industry used, and now that we've seen even the federal government use in the pandemic to those black swan events is we're going to step in, make sure there's not this, the bottom doesn't fall out of the housing market. So all that to say, I actually think a black swan event could be another positive jolt to the housing market in a crazy sort of way, because of that. I don't have a list like I did back then of potential shocks, but I think right now the biggest thing is that how is this market going to be able to come back from the kind of the stimulus that experienced during the pandemic? Is it going to be able to land on its two feet, or is there going to be this hangover where they're stumbling? The drunk analogy. How are we gonna how is the market going to stand up on its own after being, basically overstimulated during the pandemic? And I think that's the biggest question for me.
It's interesting that, I think as a black swan event as something that would impact the housing market negatively. But yeah, as you just mentioned, the black swan with COVID had the opposite effect. People felt like they needed to own homes in this kind of weird environment, and it just went nuts. But the stimulus, the government policy that's implemented to prevent a crash always has unintended consequences, and we just don't really know what those are until we start seeing them and go, oh gosh, wow, who would have thought housing prices would have shot up during COVID? We thought, like you mentioned, the first 2 or 3 months, everybody thought the market was going to crash, and then it went nuts. Interest rates, mortgage rates 6.5, pushing 7%. I heard some analysts said that it could potentially get up to 9% over the next 12 to 18 months. How is it possible that we just don't see housing stagnation? I guess if we see home price values decline as a result of higher interest rates, people with cash are in a good position because they'll see home values decline and be able to snap up for cash. But does that mean we're just more of an investment market and a more of a rental market? What's the long-term prognosis of like stagnation and for the economy in general?
Yeah, we're in this. I consider this kind of this weird standoff right now between a buyer's and seller's market. We were clearly in a seller's market in 2021 and the first half of this year, I would say, or the first couple months of this year. And we're shifting, but we're not clearly in a buyer's market yet either because of some of the issues that you mentioned. And the market has not yet, prices have not come back down enough to compensate for the jump in interest rates in terms of, you look at your monthly payment on a median priced home, that is still up pretty dramatically from a year ago, even as home prices are slowing down, but they haven't gone negative. So I do think that we're seeing the housing market respond finally. I was amazed that the housing market wasn't responding to the affordability crunch back in 2021. We saw the shift to worsening affordability starting in February 2021, and it wasn't really until those interest rates really started going up that we've seen the housing market respond. I think we're going to be in I would call it probably stagnation, where home sales are down dramatically. We're already seeing that, and home prices dropped to close to zero and possibly negative in some markets, even by the end of this year. And so we'll have that stagnation, and then I'm not sure how long that will last before finally the sellers will have to capitulate, and there'll be enough sellers who just can't wait, continue to wait, and will need to sell for whatever reason, and we'll see that flip to more of a buyer's market, more explicitly a buyer's market, where there's more inventory and buyers have more ability, more leverage to bring down the prices. So I think now in that period of that kind of in between period, cash buyers may be in a good, really good spot. But again, prices haven't really come down, I don't think, enough for many of those buyers. And relating back actually to one of the questions you asked earlier is one of the things we're hearing from investors is there's a lot of them who are waiting for that shift to finally happen and to jump. They're keeping a lot of dry powder, as they would say, and anticipating a point where they could jump into the market and buy at an attractive price point. So that's, we have the standoff where those buyers are kind of waiting around to jump in. The sellers are there's not enough highly motivated sellers that you're seeing a lot of inventory. And so we're still a little bit in that standoff that I think will result in a few months of at least a few months of stagnation in the housing market.
I agree. We're right in that spot where the buyers are bidding in the potential future and the sellers haven't accepted it yet. Which goes to my last question. We're just about out of time. You had mentioned your investors on auction.com are, you know, already starting to bid down and seeing the writing on the wall that, you know, at least there's going to be very low home price appreciation, not compared to what it was. Are you seeing their bids being taken, or to the point you just discussed, are you selling less on auction.com because the bid ask is still a little wide?
That's a great question. And it's more of the latter. The sellers on our platform have not yet realized bought into the future that the buyers are buying into. And so we are seeing that, we look at the sales rate. That sales rate has dropped. It spiked dramatically during the pandemic, and now it's dropping back more to closer to pre-pandemic levels. The sellers did become accustomed to that higher sales rate, though, and so I think there's a good chance that they could be more aggressive in buying into that idea that, you know, if they don't sell at the foreclosure auction, they'll be basically taking back a property that is losing value, which is not a good scenario for them to be in. But we're seeing that standoff on our platform right now. And so it'll be interesting to see if the sellers do capitulate, or, I mean, there's a chance that there's a shift in the market. We actually saw this. There was a point where our buyers started to get more conservative back in late 2021, but then then it shifted back again. They became more aggressive in bidding. You could, it's hard to know some of the macroeconomic things that go on, but that you could see that scenario play out. But I think it's more likely that eventually the sellers will need to capitulate a little bit.
Excellent. Well, Darren, thanks so much for taking the time to join the podcast. I know you're super busy, we'll have you. I'd like to have you on. It's been a while since you've been on, but I'd like to get you back on sooner than later, maybe 6 months down the road to see where we're at. But thanks again for joining.
Thanks, Lewis. Always a pleasure to be on, and good to talk to you.
Yep. Talk to you soon. That wraps up today's podcast. Thanks for tuning in. We will be having several more discussions on housing over the next few series, so stay tuned, and we'll get you as much information as possible. Talk to you next time.
This has been a production of Capital Markets Today, a leading aggregator of news, tweets, and podcasts for mortgage, real estate, and capital market industries. You can subscribe to the Capital Markets Today podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Libsyn, and other major podcast distributors. Go to www.capital-mt.com for more information and to subscribe to our daily newsletter. Find out why we have over 50,000 subscribers worldwide.